of the mustard seed. Another parable put he forth unto them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like to a grain of mustard seed. Now, what is the mustard seed? Again, it's the gospel or the word of God. But here he adds the tangy, biting aspect of the gospel message, the irritating aspect. It's now not just a seed. It's like a mustard seed that comes to you flaming and irritating and burning and hurting. And he said, that's when the gospel is preached. Something hurts down in your heart, and it irritates you, and it upsets you. And if you make the wrong response, you'll get mad at both the gospel and the person who pronounces it. He said, get ready for that. It's like a grain of mustard seed, which a man, who is a man? Jesus took and sowed in his field. What is his field? The world, which indeed is the least of all seeds. I could hold a grain of mustard seed in my hand and close my index finger and my thumb and totally cover it so that you would not know it's there. So very small is it. But, he says, when it is grown, it is the greatest among herbs. Now, if he had stopped there, everything would have been in order, because that's the way mustard seeds produce. They produce somewhat large shrubs, usually about waist high or a little less. But he didn't stop there. He said, in this case, it went on to become a tree. Now, as far as I know, never in the history of the world has a mustard seed ever produced a tree. As far as I know, produces an herb, and that's a totally different species from a tree. It has no woody fiber in it at all. Can't produce a tree. What does Jesus mean? He means that in this age, you're going to see a sensational expansion of the overt outward church, and it will become like an umbrella and just cover anything and everything in sight, and most of it is totally unreal. It's like an herb that is supposed to produce a little shrub. He called his flock a little flock. He said it is to be separated unto his purpose. It is to be identified with him. It is to engage in its struggles with one another, working these things out, and it is supposed to represent Christ in the world. And it doesn't do a very good job of that. Why? Because it has taken in everything. Everything. That's what he means. Instead of having its normal small height with power, you see, a cutting edge must be narrow to have power. And the church has lost its cutting edge because it is not narrow as Jesus commanded it to be. And that irritates many people. And he said it's going to become a tree so that the birds, now who are the birds? They are the agents of Satan. They come and lodge in the branches. So the church is going to be divided into multiplied branches during this age. Why, just look at it. Did Jesus know what he was talking about? Certainly. And what an authentic and accurate picture this is right here. You see, this is the age in which the religious system that is under the umbrella of the name of Christ is rooted in the world instead of in heaven. And it expands in earthly and worldly expansion, seeking greatness, even politically, in the earth. And it loses its power to represent Jesus Christ. So he warns against sensational expansion of the professing church. That's the parable of the mustard seed. Now, God willing, I want to come back to that in just a few moments. And then in the fourth parable, he warns against subtle infiltration of the propaganda of Satan in the sphere of Christian profession, including the church, throughout this age. Look at verse 33. Another parable spake he unto them. The kingdom of heaven is like unto leaven. Now, what does leaven always stand for? Something good or something evil? Evil, always in the Bible. Never for anything good. Never, ever for anything good. So it stands for corrupting evil that is advancing inside the professing kingdom. The kingdom of heaven is like unto leaven, which a woman took. Now, who does the woman stand for? Let me answer. She stands for a false religious system. Every time a woman is used in a bad sense in the teachings of Jesus, she always stands for a false religious system, which a woman took and hid in three measures of meal, the picture of communion with God and consecration to God. And here is a false religious system taking corrupting teachings and investing them into the true relationship with God until it spreads and the entire thing is corrupted by the leaven. Now, what is he talking about? He's talking about the infestation and infection of false teaching in the professing church that is invested in it by a false religious system. It begins to spread like leaven. It just grows silently, constantly and constantly and constantly, and gets worse and worse and worse and worse until finally the whole is leavened. When Jesus comes back and takes his church out, there'll still be a church remaining. It's made up of all those who profess Christ but do not possess him. And then it's going to be totally filled with evil in the earth. And that church will be a part of the judgment of God in the end time. In fact, it's called the great harlot, the great whore. It's called Babylon the Great in the book of Revelation. And it will just be leveled to the earth in the judgment of God as it's burned up in the judgment of God after Jesus comes to get his people unto himself. And that seven-year period, the purging, the judgment of that church, and then into the millennium as Christ's people reign over the earth. So he warns us and warns us and warns us and warns us not to try to stop these things, but to be aware of them and sow the seed. That's our business. Keep on sharing the gospel. Keep on presenting Christ. Now let's quickly turn it over and see the other side. The other side concerns the wisdom of God revealed in this age. What has God been doing all this time? And people are invariably asking, well, if all that is true, what chance is there? Or why doesn't God do something about it? Why doesn't God stop the growth of sin? If there is a God, why doesn't he end wars? Why doesn't he obliterate sin? Why doesn't he close things down? Why doesn't he bang down the window and close shop? Why doesn't he get it all over with? Jesus said all through this, God is right on schedule, and don't ever forget that. His purpose never was to do that great, great mushrooming, massive thing like an ecclesiastical octopus gathering in everything. That never was his purpose. What is his purpose? In the last three parables, he tells us. In the first one, he tells us that his purpose is to secure an historical people unto himself to demonstrate his government over the world at the end of this age in the millennium. Who are those people? The Jews. Verse 44, the kingdom of heaven is like unto treasure. What is that treasure? Israel, the Jews, hid in a field. What is the field? The world. When Jesus came, Israel was engulfed in the world, swallowed up in the Roman Empire. And for four centuries, its glory had departed, and it was nothing as far as God's people is concerned. The which, when a man, who is the man? Jesus, has found, how did he find it? He found it in coming to the earth. He then hides. Now, why? Because Israel rejected his proposed kingdom. So he turned right around and hid the treasure right back in the field, the world again. So for 19 centuries, Israel remained hidden, scattered all over the world, penetrating everywhere. The wandering Jew, we call him. You couldn't tell the difference between him and anything else unless you looked carefully. And now, at the last part of these last days, God is collecting his earthly people, the Jews, into a unity and forming them so that in the millennium, having been purged through the tribulation, so they bow to the lordship of Christ, he's going to demonstrate his government through the Jews for 1,000 solid years. And the world is going to see what it could have had from Jesus Christ if it had only listened. Perfect government. A perfect governor. Ruling through one unit of people from the throne of David in Jerusalem will be Jesus. And his earthly rule will be through the Jews. And his heavenly rule through the second people he selected for himself. In the second parable there, verses 45 and 46, there is the selecting of an heavenly people. And it's called the pearl of great price. Now what is that? It is the church. Let me read it. The kingdom of heaven, verse 45. Is like unto a merchant man. Who is that merchant man? Jesus. Seeking goodly pearls. That means he comes looking for companies of people in whom he can dwell. He found some Old Testament believers, and he will find some tribulation saints, those saved out of the great tribulation. But looking for goodly pearls, he found one pearl of great price, and that was his church formed in this age. And he went and sold all that he had. That means he gave himself everything he owned and possessed and paid the price of himself to buy that pearl unto himself. So he bought the church with the awful price of his own blood. And he now has for himself an heavenly people. Not many. Nothing like what you see. But they are his. And he's purging them. Correcting them, working with them, vocationally investing himself in them and asking them to vocationally invest themselves in him. And they are on His purpose, His plan, His schedule. With all their frailties and stumblings and distractions, they are on His purpose and His schedule. Now we come